To make up for 3 months of sports starvation, the month of September has delivered in a big way. The NHL, MLB, NBA, and NFL are back in full swing, and college football is roaring back to life. The ACC and Big 12 kicked off the Power Five's return last weekend, with the SEC set to join them in just a few days. Does Notre Dame constitute a legitimate challenge to Clemson's reign in the ACC? Will Florida finally break through and take back the SEC East crown? Is Oklahoma destined to cruise through the Big 12 yet again and route to another college football playoff berth? Find out on this episode of Stone Cold Sports Talk.
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Fires to the end zone. Touchdown! Alabama wins!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 18 of Stone Cold Sports Talk. I'm Luke Stone, joined by resident Bulldog Taft Gant and homebound Tar Heel Jay Banzette of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Online. Boys, it's great to be back with you all talking about something that now feels so much more real to us than it ever has before, college football. Before we get back down to business, let's try that again. Before we get down to the business of this weekend, let's talk big picture this season. Which storylines are you most looking forward to talking about as the season progresses?
Well, Stone, first of all, I'm just so happy that sports are back. And although college football is my favorite to watch, we have everything. Golf, tennis. I mean, this weekend we had the U.S. Open and NFL on the same day. I didn't even know what to watch. It was incredible. But going back to college football, the most interesting storyline that I am excited to watch unfold is going to have to be how the college football playoff committee will seed teams in this weird coronavirus schedule where the Power Four, I guess you can say now, that unless the Pac-12 decides to make the right decision and play a season, how they're going to seed the teams in a conference-only schedule, because they won't be able to compare mutual games. They won't be able to compare Ohio State playing the same team as Oklahoma or something that would happen in a non-conference game in the first few weeks of the season. So I think that you have – we'll get into our predictions later, but you have the clear favorites to win the conference like Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma. But if one of those teams loses or gets upset, how are they going to use the conference-only schedule to seed them? I think the College Football Playoff Committee has – a difficult task this year with the weird schedule due to the coronavirus.
And I think the bigger question the College Football Playoff Committee is going to need to answer is, how do you decide which conference has really been better than the others if there's no overlap? Because if the entire SEC can look really good against each other, but it's possible that maybe their champion is not quite as good as it has been in recent years. Jay, what about you? Which storyline do you think is most intriguing heading into, you could say, the real start of the Power Five season now that we've got three back and everyone's actually playing and we seem to be hopefully moving on, knock on wood, the postponements that kind of plagued the first couple weeks of the year?
Yeah, my main question is, can somebody finally dethrone the Oklahoma Sooners in the Big 12? Like, I am sick of seeing Lincoln Riley in the Sooner Schooner or whatever flipping over last year. Like, I want to see that happen to the actual football team. I think they've got a really – this is kind of a perfect storm scenario for Oklahoma to finally lose, because they've got a redshirt freshman quarterback who just made his first start 2 weeks ago. He's ultra-talented, Spencer Rattler. But he's never – like, the last three guys they've had, Baker Mayfield was a three-year starter. Kyler Murray kind of – I guess he was the same situation, but he was a junior because he'd come out the next year. So he had experience at Texas A&M before he got to Oklahoma, and then he had sat under Baker. And then Jalen Hurts had played – oh, God, a number of wins at Alabama in big-time moments. So they all three had pretty much big-game experience. But this guy, Rattler, was in high school 2 years ago, and he just made his first start 2 weeks ago. I think Texas has a good shot with Sam Ellinger, who is literally like Tim Tebow. It just seems like he never goes away from college football. He's like he and Ian Book are just like 10-year journeymen in college football. Oklahoma State, I actually think, is a very realistic sleeper pick because they've got a big three on offense with running back Chuba Hubbard, who led the nation in yards last year. Tylan Wallace, who missed the majority of last season, but was a 2018 finalist for the Biletnikoff Award. And Spencer Sanders, who comes back. I believe this is his second year starting with Chuba. So there's never any defense in the Big 12. But certainly Oklahoma State, I think, has enough offense to keep up with Oklahoma, and Texas with Sam Ellinger. They just always seem to have close games with Oklahoma. So I think those two teams, and then West Virginia, I don't know. They've looked really good, albeit they played like Eastern Kentucky, but they could be a serious dark horse. But just somebody's got to beat Oklahoma at some point, and I think this is a good year for that to happen.
I think the thing that could really make that happen is the fact that the Big 12 is all playing itself. There's always seems to be that number two seed in the Big 12 heading into the conference championship since they brought it back. I guess that was in 2018. That has one loss in non-conference or a fluky conference loss. And it feels like West Virginia could be one of those teams that happens to get lucky through its most of its Big 12 schedule and then maybe finds itself as either a one loss or an undefeated team in a conference championship. And then at that point, with the Pac-12 out of the picture, and that's one of the things I want to talk about is I'm sad the Pac-12 is not playing football, but also so joyful we can kind of get over this, putting the undefeated Pac-12 champion in the playoff to be lambs to the slaughter against Clemson or Alabama. But yeah, absolutely, I think that the Big 12 is really a wide open race for number two, just because there's so much. There aren't any Big 12 teams that have to play an SEC or an ACC team in non-conference. They're playing the Eastern Kentuckys of the world and are getting some lucky breaks there. My big storyline to watch this season, it really all comes down to one game, which I think it's the first weekend in November or last weekend in October, and it's Florida against Georgia. Dan Mullen is in year three now. He finally seems to have found his quarterback in Kyle Trask. He's got an interesting little multi-headed QB system between Trask and Emory Jones for a change of pace. And I think that the storyline I'm most looking forward to watch is, can Florida, after 3 years or 2 years of being better than people expected, the expectations are high this year. They're supposed to be the biggest challenger to Georgia in the SEC East again, but can they finally close the deal and can they finally beat Georgia in Jacksonville? Kyle Trask is supposed to be a little better than he was last season, and he was pretty good last season after filling in for Felipe Franks. Kyle Pitts is an unbelievably talented tight end. He's big, he's strong, and if he put on some size, he could be a real formidable presence in the SEC East. And then, of course, there's the Todd Grantham third down defense. I was familiarized with this term last week. Third and Grantham is something that Georgia fans used to say, because Todd Grantham is very much a throw the kitchen sink at you on third down kind of guy. And for most games at Florida, it works because they're playing against either depleted SEC East offensive lines. They've just got an unbelievable pass rush, and linebackers get back there and get pressure on quarterbacks and wreak havoc. But last year, Jake Fromm and Georgia went 12 for 18 on third down against Florida. It was one of the most frustrating parts of watching that game, was how Florida would keep sending the house on defense, and then, you know, Fromm drops back, easily finds whoever he needs to find out in the flat. Or, I mean, I think there was one play. I don't know if – was Isaac not on Georgia last year? No, Wolf, is that the guy – who was the tight end last year for Georgia?
It was not – Nada was there 2 years ago.
I think it was Eli Wolf, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there were just a ton of plays where Fromm would drop back, almost get hit, but then find Eli Wolf on like a 5 yard out on third and four. And obviously, mathematics says that's enough to pick up the first down. So I think that the defensive third down defense is going to be huge for Florida in that Georgia game this year. And then, of course, you've got the two QB system kind of. Can Emory Jones come in basically for a series or two a game or a drive or two per game and really deliver that change of pace and get Florida through its schedule, and more importantly, take Florida over the finish line against Georgia? But I think that Mullen overperformed relative to his expectations the last two seasons, but now I think that Florida fans are expecting to be back at the top of the SEC and at least in a conference championship, if not winning one. So that storyline is very fascinating. Another great storyline, always the college football playoff predictions. Jay, why don't you go ahead and lead us off? Who do you think is going to make the college football playoff this season?
So the way I look at it, there's a pretty obvious choice here. Actually, two pretty obvious choices. Clemson, like, there's not much of an explanation needed here. The ACC is still, even as a Carolina fan, we're on the rise, but we're not going to beat Clemson this year. Notre Dame, I feel like once they actually play either us, Notre Dame actually travels to Chapel Hill on my birthday. It's kind of a special thing this year. I feel like Notre Dame's going to get exposed by somebody this year, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's by North Carolina. So I don't really think Clemson's going to have much of a problem as usual. Ohio State, I think, will end up being the two seed behind Clemson simply because they are only playing eight games instead of a full 11 for Clemson. Ohio State's actually the best team in the country in my mind. They'll just be seeded lower because they have fewer wins to look at. And then I think coming out of the SEC, Alabama, they missed it last year, and it's not rare. It's pretty rare that they miss it. That was the only time, actually. So I think there's too much Najee Harris, too much Jalen Waddle, too much Devontae Smith, and it doesn't really matter who's playing at quarterback. I know Mac Jones was named the starter yesterday, but Bryce Young can come in and play if he wants to. Mac Jones, it doesn't really matter when you've got a running back like that and two receivers like that. And then obviously the defense that they're going to have with Coach Saban. I would not be surprised, though, and Stone, you might call me crazy. I think Florida will beat Georgia this year. I'm not as confident in Alabama this year as I have been in recent years. So Florida actually may end up – I talked about this a month ago, I think, with y'all. I think Florida has a serious shot to win the SEC. And then the fourth team that I have getting in, I actually do think that Oklahoma State, with that trio I talked about earlier, will beat Oklahoma. They will not win in Bedlam in the last week of the regular season, but they will win when it matters in the Big 12 championship, and Oklahoma State will make the playoff with one loss to Oklahoma.
Yeah, did you watch the Oklahoma State game last week?
I had a friend over and watched it, and it was embarrassing. But you also got to remember, their first-string quarterback played one series. Second-string guy was some absolute crap. I don't ever want to see him on a football field again. And then they brought in a true freshman who actually played decently well in the second half. It was alarming because I told my friend – his name is Graham. He came over. He goes to High Point. I told him before the game. He listened to my podcast last week, and so I put in there that Oklahoma State was my playoff prediction. And so we started watching the game, and I'm like, they'll catch it. Whatever. They're just off to a slow start. And then we get to the fourth quarter, and they're down 3 to Tulsa at home. I'm like, the heck? What's going on here? But they looked really bad last week, but they also were on a third-string true freshman quarterback.
Yeah, come on. You should know this. It's all about surviving and advancing. That's all you got to do. Just got to win just enough to make the playoff. Taft, who do you think? You have an equally unconventional Big 12 pick in your playoff. Let's hear yours.
Yeah, so obviously Clemson, Ohio State, just can't see them losing in their conferences. And Jay said a good point where Ohio State only has 8 games to prove, whereas Clemson has – I believe 12 in the ACC. So Clemson 1, Ohio State 2. And then the next two teams I have sneaking in, one from the SEC, one from the Big 12, I think will have one loss. And I think that there will be multiple teams in each conference going into or both teams that will play in the conference championship will have one loss. In the SEC, I think that's going to be Georgia and then either Alabama or Florida. Georgia has the toughest 5-game stretch in college football this year. They play Auburn and Tennessee at home. Then they travel to Bama, at Bama, at Kentucky. Then they'll play Florida and Jacksonville. If Florida can get through those 5 games with only one loss, I think they will. I think they'll fall in Tuscaloosa. But I think they'll avenge their loss to the Tide in Atlanta in the SEC championship. And they'll sneak into that number 3 spot. And then at the 4th spot, I had Oklahoma, but at the last second, I'm going to change it to Texas. I just trust Sam Ellinger more than I do Spencer Rattler at this point. And I think that out of all years for Oklahoma not to make the playoff and get the 4 seed, like it seems like they have since the playoffs' existence, I think Texas will beat them in the Big 12 championship and get that 4th spot and then just get blown out by Clemson.
So I'm going to go with probably the least sexy picks for the college football playoff, also known as basically – this is the equivalent of taking the 1 seed in the NCAA tournament and just dragging their name all the way to the Final 4.
Are you just going chalk here, Stone? Is that what
total chalk. Total 100% chalk. But I've got some fun blank can make the playoff if statements I'll go through. So Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, I think are all – okay, so Taft does not have Ohio State. Oh, no, he does. Okay, so Clemson and Ohio State are both fixtures in ours. Jay and I both agree on Alabama. And then I throw Oklahoma in there just because when I have no idea if anyone can beat them in the Big 12, so it feels a lot safer to say Oklahoma than to be trendy and take a risk and, you know, throw Oklahoma State or Texas in there. I honestly can't justify the Oklahoma pick to you other than the fact that they always seem to be the one winning the Big 12, at least in recent years. So I don't see any real reason that would change unless Sam Ellinger does that. But here are the fun blank can make the playoff if statements. One, Florida can make the playoff if Kyle Trask improves, Kyle Pitts stays a beast, and Donovan Steiner and Marco Wilson can stop Pickens and Georgia and the Waddle-Smith combination at Alabama. And then there's a fourth, which is equally crucial. LSU has to take a step back because Florida has to be able to beat them at home this year, which I think do all of us agree LSU is going to be good but not great this season?
They're going to be all right, but they're going to be mediocre, let's be honest here.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be as good as people say they will. They just have so much to replace in the offense and the coaching staff, so I think they'll be mediocre.
They'll go – I've heard people say 5-5. I don't see a reigning national champ going 5-5 under any circumstances.
It's just so confusing. It's a 10-game schedule. I have, like, no idea. I'm like, well, this feels like a 9-3 team. And, like, well, they're playing, like, 10 games, so something's got to give here. I guess that makes them 7-3. Do I think they're 8-2? And you also can't count – the weird thing is going to be there aren't going to be cheap non-conference wins. Like, you're not going to get, like, teams that are awful in the SEC and go 2 and whatever but end up being 6-6 and making a bowl game. Sorry, yeah. Vanderbilt.
LSU plays Mississippi State. That's actually going to be a good game. At Vandy should be a dub. Missouri should be a dub. And then Florida, L, I think so. South Carolina should be a dub. Auburn, Bama, L's. Arkansas, dub. A&M, L. Ole Miss.
Hey, is Felipe starting at Arkansas this year? Is that happening?
Yes.
That's going to be so exciting to watch that dumpster fire unfold. Okay.
An atrocity down there.
Second playoff if statement. Notre Dame can make the playoff if they beat Clemson twice. I mean, I think that's pretty – if they can beat Clemson twice, even if they're a one-loss team, they're probably in the playoff because they will have won an ACC championship. Fair? Even if Carolina beats
If you beat Trevor Lawrence twice, you're getting in. I don't care what school you go to.
Texas can make the playoff if – I initially had written JK, it's Texas. Did you really think that was going to happen? But I guess, I mean, there is a path. They just got to beat Oklahoma also twice. And also not have
they don't have to beat them twice. They have to win you don't have to beat a team twice. You have to win the second matchup.
That's
true. You have to win the game that's more recent.
Yeah, but I'm assuming Texas is going to drop. But Texas is probably going to drop some random game. And I feel like a 2-loss Texas isn't necessarily getting it.
If they drop another game and then lose to Texas, a 2-loss team may get in this year, but I don't.
Yeah.
As long as a team wins its conference championship, it's got to, like, if you lose to a team earlier and then beat them in the conference championship, you're going to get in over that team.
And then my last playoff if statement is Washington can make the playoff if, ha ha ha, the Pac-12 canceled their season and we finally don't have to go through this charade of letting their weak champion get a sniff of the playoff. Thank the sweet Lord Jesus H. Christ. No Washington. No Oregon, no random Utah. Oh, maybe they're the team this year. We have to go through. Finally, the worst Power 5 conference that, like, rivals. I don't know. Maybe the Sun Belt is better than the Pac-12 this year if they were to play a full season.
Somebody brought up a serious point last week, and it's kind of true. The American is actually, like, good this year.
I don't want to acknowledge that because it requires me to say that UCF deserves any sort of credit, and I'm not doing that. But
it did come during the UCF Georgia Tech game. I will say that.
All right, so packed slate this weekend. I'd imagine that we'll probably get some sort of article or other content out with more individual game by game predictions. For the sake of brevity, we're going to go with our bets of the week: one spread, one money line, one over under that you love. Taft, lead us off.
So we'll start off with the spread. I really like NC State +7 at Virginia Tech. Tech has been dealing with COVID all offseason. They've had many problems. They had to cancel their first two games of the season.
Now they can Stone's shaking his head as a UVA fan.
I'm just saying, we opened and we haven't had to cancel a game yet. That was me frantically knocking on wood in the background. But, yeah. Anyway, continue.
That's what they're doing in Charlottesville a little more than they I do over in Blacksburg. But I think that 7 points in their first game of the season after having so many distractions will be a lot to cover, especially over an NC State team that had an impressive showing last week against Wake Forest in a 48-45 victory. Going to the money line, I like Louisville to win outright. They're plus 115. They're playing at Pitt, and both teams are ranked near the bottom of the top 25. But I cannot see Louisville losing another game just because I think that they have a good squad this year. And I see them beating Pitt outright, even though they're 2.5-point dogs, as we will hear in Jay's predictions. But going to the over-under, I'm going to go with Georgia-Arkansas, one of the games that I know more about this upcoming weekend. Arkansas, I cannot see them scoring more than twice against Georgia's defense. I mean, Georgia has one of, if not the best defense in college football this year, and I can't see Arkansas putting up more than two scores. And then that would leave a lot of points for Georgia to cover with a new offensive coordinator in Todd Monken and quarterbacks JT Daniels and Dwayne Mathis. Georgia's going to have a good offense this year. I have a lot of faith, but I can't see them putting up that many points to cover the 54.5 point over-under.
Jay, what about you? Your bets of the week, even though you're not a better.
I am not a better. I will stick with that Louisville game, though. They're 2.5 dogs. They're ranked 24th, 2.5-point underdogs over the 21st-ranked Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm going to take Louisville outright to win that. Just win that game straight up. I'm with you, Taft. I don't think Louisville's going to lose back-to-back weeks. Malik Cunningham is too special at quarterback. The money line, I'll take TCU plus 115 over Iowa State. I'm really not betting in favor of Iowa State anywhere these days. They looked atrocious 2 weeks ago against Louisiana Lafayette at home. That was one of the more embarrassing things I've seen. So I'll TCU plus 115 on the money line. And then the over-under, Troy put up, 49 points last week, and BYU hung 50-something on Navy 2 weeks ago. So I'm going to take the over 61 points in Troy at number 18, BYU.
All right, sounds good. I'm going to go with my spread pick of the week, number 22, Army. Is a 14-point dog against Cincinnati. Army had a very strong start to the season. They beat Middle Tennessee 42-0, and then Louisiana Monroe 37-7. They can put points up. Cincinnati had a similarly strong start by beating Austin Peay 55-20. This is the same Austin Peay that had to shorten its second half quarters against Pittsburgh to 10 minutes each because they were getting slaughtered so badly by the Panthers up at Heinz Field. So I like Army to cover plus 14 at number 11, Cincinnati. I have no idea what the exact score of that game is going to be. It just feels like Army is going to be a little closer than that. Moneyline pick of the week, Tennessee minus 140 over South Carolina. South Carolina figured out what one of their quarterbacks transferred on them, right?
Well, you got to remember Jake Bentley left, and then they brought in, what's his name? Either his first name or his last name is Colin something. From Colorado State, and he comes in and just takes the job from Ryan Helinski's hands, just like that. They're not even waiting to week one to decide. And anytime you get a Colorado State transfer to play, guaranteed at South Carolina, I believe they always play Georgia, Florida, LSU. I know they've got Tennessee and Kentucky, all five ranked teams. Anytime you bring in a guy like that who isn't super highly known, he's not a Derek King coming from Houston or somewhere like that, he's going to struggle early and often. So I think South Carolina is in for a butt whooping this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Tennessee, meanwhile, Jeremy Pruitt has done a good job turning that program around. Last season, they looked absolutely hapless early on. I think they ended up losing to BYU or something at home, right? They lost to BYU in Neyland. It seemed like the sky was falling. The Pruitt thing was going to go just as bad as the Derek Dooley thing and the Butch Jones thing after that. But Pruitt, much to his credit, turned it around. Tennessee made a bowl game. And Jarrett Guarantano at quarterback for another year, I think, could really turn it around for the Vols. And they'll end up beating South Carolina this weekend and potentially have a chance to be a spoiler in the SEC. Nah, they'll be like third. They're like a guaranteed third, but outside of that. Tennessee minus 140 over South Carolina. And then my over-under pick of the week is under 59 in Kansas-Baylor. To be honest, I know really nothing about either of these teams. I know Baylor was pretty good last year, made the Big 12 championship game.
So hold on. Kansas lost by double digits to Coastal Carolina at home.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, but I mean, I can't name any players. Well, obviously, I can't name a Kansas player because, you know, it's Kansas. But
the only reason Coastal Carolina has ever been relevant on the national scene was when they won the, I think it was the 2015 College World Series. That is it. That is the only time ever. And they beat Kansas by, I think it was 13 points in Lawrence. That's ridiculous.
Go Chanticleers. Yeah, but under 59 in Kansas-Baylor, I don't know how much Baylor puts up. I know for a fact, though, that Kansas isn't putting up more than like 15 or 16, and Baylor doesn't seem – I think this is Baylor's first game, so I would doubt that they'll put up more than 40 just because that's always hard to do. So under 59, Kansas-Baylor, Tennessee minus 140, Army plus 14 over Cincinnati, picks of the week. Before we head to our obligatory facts or fake news, today's random blast from the past of the week was a name that popped into my head out of nowhere. It is Colin Klein. He was the quarterback for Kansas State in 2012 and led Bill Snyder and the Wildcats to an 11-2 record overall, an 8-1 record in the Big 12 Conference, a Big 12 championship, and a Fiesta Bowl loss against Oregon. Jay, what sticks out to you the most from that game?
There's a couple of things. First of all, but even before the game, you got to remember, Kansas State and Oregon were ranked 1-2 in the same week. I think it was in early November. Kansas State lost, got blown out in Waco by Baylor. I think it was by, it was like 35 points or something like that. And then Oregon lost to Stanford. So they both lost as the top two teams in the country on the same week. And then that Kansas State, the actual Fiesta Bowl game, that was not close. DeAnthony Thomas took the opening kick back for Oregon. Marcus Mariota, that was his first year starting. He was a redshirt freshman. That would throw back to the Chip Kelly Oregon days. That was the peak of college football right there. It was like the last year, the last 2 years of the BCS, the first year of the playoff. But I just remember that game. I've gone back and watched that game a couple of times the last couple of years. That game was not close. It was honestly embarrassing because Colin Klein, we had a lot of respect for Colin Klein. Like he was a Tim Tebow light, I guess I could say, without all the postseason awards. But that game was just not close.
Colin Klein, Kansas State, 2012, our throwback player of the week or blast from the past player of the week. We'll figure out a name for that. We'll have J.R. Taft provide the one next week. And no, it can't be Jordan Lynch unless you want it to be. All right.
Oh, my God. You want to talk about Heisman finalists from Northern Illinois? Are you serious?
Facts or fake news,
that's
number one.
Legendary.
Facts or fake news, number one. The New England Patriots are back in the driver's seat for the AFC East.
I think they've always been in the driver's seat, even when Tampa Brady left for the Bucs. However, I do like the Buffalo Bills a lot. They impressed me a lot in week one. Last week, they only had, a three-point win over
Miami. Backdoor cover by the Dolphins, but all
Josh Allen was a beast on my fantasy team last week. That's a side note, but he went off.
I think New England will stay in the driver's seat until they give us a reason not to be, and considering the fact that they are 2-0, we don't
They're
have
one and one.
One and one.
Yeah. I mean, the Seahawks thing was a moral victory, but yeah.
That is fair. I think that they, even though it was a loss to Seattle, in Seattle, I think it was still impressive. So after their first two games, 1-1, excuse me, they're still in the driver's seat today.
It's okay. And they feel like they're 2-0. They feel like the way Cam has played, you're like, this has got to be a 2-0 team. Jay, facts or fake news?
I feel like that's fake news. I'm a big fan of the Buffalo Bills right now. Their defense looked pretty bad last week, but they looked really, really good in week one. You got to remember last week when they played Miami, there was that big rain delay in the middle of the game, and you never know what's going to happen on the backside of a rain delay. So I just think that Josh Allen now with Stephon Diggs and Zach Moss and running back with Devin Singletary, I just think it's the Bills' year. It's a perfect storm, basically.
And John Brown out of nowhere has been super, super reliable for Josh Allen. I'm going to say facts for the Patriots, though. I agree with you. I like how the Bills look. I think that they have the chance to be a 10 or 11 win football team and probably will be. But New England, I mean, that was an impressive performance. I mean, when you consider all of the opt-outs that they had on the defensive side of the ball and that they were They obviously didn't do much to stop Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks, but their defense made the stops late, kind of, except for the fact that Pete Carroll decided to throw the ball on third down, which was interesting, in the fourth quarter of that game. But on the flip side, the offense for New England has looked really good. Julian Edelman is looking like he's 29 years old again. I mean, he's just been unbelievable. And I think that New England will be in the driver's seat, and they have a very good chance to win the AFC East. I would say they are. Facts or fake news number two. I hope there's not much dispute with this, but Russell Wilson is the best quarterback in the NFL right now. Jay, fact, fake news.
That's a fact. And it's really weird to be saying that because Lamar Jackson exists and Patrick Mahomes exists. But this moment, Russell Wilson, week one, had as many touchdowns as incompletions. Last week, he had 6 incompletions and 5 touchdowns. So week one, 4 touchdowns, 4 incompletions. Week two, 6 incompletions, 5 touchdowns. That's enough said. 2-0, beat a good Patriots team at home, beat the defensive player of the year all over the field, Stephon Gilmore with DK Metcalf, who's Julio Jones 2.0, let's be honest here. And I mean, it's hard pressed to go against Lamar, and I know I sound crazy, but honestly, Russell Wilson, he's on my fantasy team. I'm a little biased, but he's playing like he's never gotten an MVP vote. Did you know that? Never gotten a single first place vote for MVP.
No, I think that'll change. I think that could change the season if he keeps up at this rate.
I think he wins the MVP outright this year. But yeah, it sounds crazy to say over Patrick Mahomes. But I just saw him, the way he looked against the Chargers on Sunday early on was a little scary, to be honest. They didn't do squat in the first half. But Russell Wilson, through 2 weeks, has just cut it loose. And, like, it's really tough, but I got to go with Russ right now. They're letting him cook.
Taft, Russell Wilson. Russell quarterback.
Is my MVP prediction for this year. So, because of that, I'm going to have to say fact, he is the best quarterback in the NFL. I wouldn't say that he's the most talented. I think Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson are still more talented than Russell Wilson. But if I could have one person on my team leading my offense, it would be Russell Wilson. And for that, I'm going to have to say that he is the best quarterback in the NFL right now, and he will remain so for the rest of the season.
I'm going to say facts as well. The only thing I would add to your very solid breakdown for both of you so far is that Russell Wilson's success seems to be independent of the talent around him. For the last 5 or 6 seasons, as things have changed, you know, Marshawn Lynch leaves. He lost Doug Baldwin, who was a really crucial target of his. Wide receivers, offensive lines, all of those things have gone, you know, sometimes just during seasons down the tubes, and he's managed to keep that offense afloat and keep Seattle relevant in the playoff picture basically every single season since he's been there. And it's a testament to the fact that he's just an immensely talented kid. I'd say kid, and he's probably closer to 30 now. Is he over 30 yet?
He's 30. He's 31.
Oh, my God. He's 31? Time flies, man. But, yeah, the success without an offensive line for a couple of seasons has been remarkable.
The success without an offensive line and without a number one receiver has been incredible. And that now he's got an offensive line, and now he's got DK Metcalf. It's like, it's exciting to watch.
And Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde have been a nice little 1-2 punch for them so far this year.
Yeah, Hyde's actually shown up. What is he on, 6 teams in the last 4 years, something like that? But he's been doing work over there in Seattle for them.
I know Taft's got somewhere to be after this, so we'll fly through these last couple of facts or fake news. Facts or fake news number 3, the Boston Celtics will come back and beat the Miami Heat. Jay Banzette.
That's fake news.
I hope you're right.
Boston would have to win 4 out of the last 5 games of the series, and I just don't see that happening.
Taft?
We get fake news. If Boston can't be clutch in games 1 and 2, I can't see them being clutch in games 6 and 7. So I think Miami Heat will win in a very close and exciting game 6/game 7, depending on how late it goes.
You know, I really like that. I like that comparison. If they're not clutching 1 and 2, they're not going to be clutching 6 and 7. That's a good line. I say fake news too. However, I just want to point out, I don't want to be the one preemptively making excuses for the Miami Heat. However, if they lose this series, it will not be the fault of their own. It will be the fault of ESPN for saying, we're just going to make the NBA move the game to Wednesday because we want to watch Drew Brees lose on the road against the Raiders. Not a fan of that.
What you're both getting the same days off, Stone.
What?
Both teams get the same day.
I know, but guess what? We're not old and hobbled with Gordon Hayward coming off his ninth ankle injury. The Miami Heat are.
Jason Tatum is 21 years old.
I'm saying the Heat have been ready to go and just been running teams into the ground this season. First of all, I just want to bring up, I know it's not relevant, but Giannis only playing 38 minutes a game, even though the Bucks have like very little depth, was very entertaining to me. Though I read a stat that today, the Heat have done the same thing with Butler and Adebayo. The difference just is that, like, I don't know, Iguodala's pretty good off the bench. Tyler Hero is pretty good off the bench.
They've got Duncan Robinson, the flamethrower, going 5 for 6 from three off the they've got him. They're going to be all right. They have depth.
Yeah, so I think that I'm just going to be mad if the Celtics come back because Hayward got more time off. Facts or fake news number 4, Tua Tagovailoa will start by mid-November.
Stone, I think you're the expert here as a Miami fan, but I'm going to go fake news just because I think that Fitzmagic has just been too impressive and it's not worth risking Tua getting hurt in his rookie season.
I'll say fake news. I'll say he starts by November 1st, not mid-November.
Oh, wow.
So a little bit of a twist.
He's not going to start by November 1st because I really don't think they want him getting hammered by Aaron Donald for 4 quarters. I think maybe the next week against Arizona they might.
Okay, yeah. Mid-November is too late for me. I don't know their exact schedule, but yeah, obviously you're not going to throw him against Aaron. You're not going to throw him against Aaron Donald. Are you serious?
The lock for him to start, though. Listen to this schedule stretch.
Oh, yeah. This is
Jets by Jets Bengals. Jets by Jets Bengals. First of all, that should be 3-0. I mean, if that's not 3-0 or at least 3 covers against the spread, then I don't know what's going on in Miami.
You're dropping your allegiance to the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, can we talk about the fact that the Jets are just like so bad? I mean,
they don't even deserve to play on Sundays. They need to go play Saturday at noon. Are you serious? Go play Louisiana Lafayette.
Yeah, they need to play Saturday at noon against, like, I don't know, Lafayette might be a bit mean. I'd say like Saturday at noon against, I mean, maybe South Carolina by week 3. All right, final facts or fake news. The Los Angeles Lakers will win the NBA Finals.
This is cut and dry clear. This is a fact. When the Clippers lost, this was cap. This was clipped right here. I mean, they have no excuse. Think about it. They're 2-0 against Denver, and who in the East? Okay, Bam would guard. Miami is a much better matchup than Boston. But if Boston comes out and wins, they may get swept. Miami
honestly,
would take like 6.
I think if Miami ends up making the finals, I think the matchup might be time to take Robinson out of the starting 5. You might need Iguodala in there just for defense. Just because I don't know because if you don't have him in there, I mean, I love Duncan Robinson, but if we're going to pretend that he's going to be able to, like, I don't know.
It'd be fun. Duncan Robinson guarding Danny Green on each side of the floor. Threes are flying.
Oh, my. Well, except Danny Green's not going to make them, but.
Oh, yeah.
Not this playoffs. I'm going to go fake news. I don't know. I think they'll make the finals. I like Miami. No. I'm kidding. It's facts. I think it'll be a lot. In the words of Lee Corso, closer than the experts predict. But
you've lost your damn mind thinking of Miami.
Yeah, Lakers in 6. Congratulations to the Los Angeles Clippers for blowing a 3-1 lead and literally their easiest chance at an NBA Finals in the next 2 seasons. Because you know, no home court advantage helps teams that don't have home court advantage, i.e. the Los Angeles Clippers. So nice job on blowing the chance for a bubble championship in a library, just with a lot more language that's cut out by ESPN. But yeah, Los Angeles Lakers, NBA Finals, 2020 champions. Taft, facts or fake news, Lakers for the finals.
I think that if I say fake news, this podcast is going to last an hour longer. So I'm going to go facts. And I do think, sadly, LeBron will get the ring this year. But closer than the experts predict. I like the Heat a lot, so. It'll be a fun series to watch, but I think that LeBron and AD are just too much to handle for the 3 remaining teams.
And finally, LeBron will get that elusive 6th ring. Just ask Nick Wright. Listen to the Nick Wright breakdown of it. One for the ones he won in Miami. The one with the comeback against from 3-1, that's basically two rings right there. So that's four. Then you get five for carrying the atrocious Cavs in 2018 to the finals, and then the sixth for winning it outright this year. Makes perfect sense.
That is disrespectful.
So I guess that means that, I guess that probably basically means that Dame Lillard gets one for taking the Blazers to the conference finals last year. That is all for episode 18 of Stone Cold Sports Talk. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Luke Stone. They are Taft Gant and Jay Banzette, and we will see you next time.